the story, stupid.
Welcome to It's the Story Stupid, the Word Drip Podcast. I'm Charles, your host and co-founder of WordTrip.com. We've been voted one of the top 101 websites for writers by Writer's Digest for the last 3 years. We're here to talk books, writing, and the publishing industry. So, let's get started. Welcome to episode 20 of It's the Story Stupid. We are going to talk about a few dialogue tricks that I learned from Orson Scott Card. And we're going to play a promo or two. Well, a promo and then a song at the end. And a couple of things on promoting your work or selling your work. Things like that that kind of came out from the Card class as well. Before that, though, there's two links, two interesting sites that I came across. Okay, one interesting site I came across, one I've known about, and I may have even mentioned before. The first one is librarything.com. I don't remember whose website I came across this on, but interesting little thing where they let you catalog your books that you're reading or you own, and then let you share that with other people to see who happens to read the same kind of books you do. Interesting concept. And the other one is my roommate from Card's writing class was Jamie Ford. He has a really great writer's blog at jamieford.com, and he blogs about other things too, but he has a lot of stuff on writing there. A lot of good, interesting discussion. Okay, time for a few dialogue tricks from Card. Normally, dialogue that you write will follow your program logically. One person actually answers the other's direct words. That's not the way people really talk, though. So, if you have a long sequence of dialogue, he says, she says, he says, she says, back and forth for quite a while, take out some of the pairs of speeches or the pairs of sentences where if he says something and then she says something back, take out those little things and it'll make your whole section a little jumpier and seem a little more authentic. If you're doing writing of marriage scenes and you're having arguments between husband and wife or even boyfriend, girlfriend, significant others, whatever, bring up old arguments repeatedly in those arguments, because all people do that when you're in a heated argument with your spouse, your significant other, you're trying to push buttons, and the way to push buttons is to bring up the old arguments, and that is something that makes things really authentic. And another thing to add on to that is that instead of somebody saying something that flows logically, have somebody do something that seems innocent, make a statement that seems innocent, but then have the reaction be totally out of proportion so you see that they know each other and have had a long relationship and that there's definitely some underlying current there. And another thing that kind of ties off of that too, but you can have this in any discussion, is to have some misunderstandings, because almost every time you're going to have a conversation with somebody, there's going to be a misunderstanding at some level, at some portion of the discussion. And also, don't be embarrassed if you have a long sequence when you're going back and forth, and you're not actually tagging, saying, he said and she said. If you have two sections in a row that were by the same person, it's okay. And the final little tick to make things seem a little more realistic with dialogue is keep your contractions in, and that's a very common one. A lot of people know that. When you're talking, I don't tell my son, you cannot do that. Well, I do if I've had to slow it down to make sure he's actually listening to me, but most people are going to say, no, you can't do that. And that's something that's very authentic, and people will notice and they'll feel if you take out contractions and make things seem longer, if they're reading that dialogue, they will notice that something doesn't feel authentic about that. Well, we're going to do a quick promo here, and then we'll come back with some more.
I'm Holly Lyle from Holly Lyle on Writing. I make a full-time, support-your-family living writing novels. My podcast teaches you how to find ways to do the same thing. I treat listeners' questions seriously. I came up with the idea of sticking a couple of pencils in my mouth to act as fangs so that I could understand the sounds that she would make. I'm going to do a little demo here for you. I never let personal opinion taint my advice. I don't recommend prologues for anything, to be real honest with you. I hate them. I coddle listeners' delicate feelings. All of my sub-characters are either currently nameless or have terrible names. Example, a fisherman named Pike. Yeah, that's a bad name. And I offer soothing, comforting analogies. If you're passionate about it, then you are going to be putting a lot of yourself into the story. And people are going to read the story and they're going to see you. Beginning writers especially are very leery about getting naked up on the roof there and dancing. But it's the job. If you're looking for someone to tell you what you want to hear, that's another show. If you want to find out how to write for a living, you're looking for me. HOLLYLISLE.LIBSYN.com.
Welcome back. I am not going to be as good as Mer Lafferty, and I should be writing at ishouldbewriting.com and give you an update on all of my submissions and rejections, because I don't have any submissions or rejections because I don't have enough stories that I really feel comfortable sending them out. But I have been writing. And this year, doing the Year on Writing with Word Trip, I've been committed to doing 350 or so words a day, and I've been pretty good with doing that for maybe 5-6 days a week, which my goal is 6 days. I'm hitting more close to 5, but hey, you live and you learn. And at Cards Writing Class, he had us do some little note cards with some story ideas that we pulled from the school library or the small town that we were taking the class at. And I've actually been working for the last couple of weeks with two stories that came from my library research up there. I can talk, really. And I kind of like what I've got. I have one that was based on a child's song, like a nursery rhyme from Japan, China, some Asiatic country. I can't remember which one, actually. And then the other one is based on just the title of a book that I thought was an interesting concept. And both are going fairly well. I've actually been doing something very strange where I'm alternating days, where on, say, Monday, I write in my Bozu story. I'm probably mispronouncing the word, but hey. And on Tuesday, I'll write on my Kosovo story, and then Wednesday, back to Bozu, and back and forth and back and forth. And it's actually worked fairly well because it has kept both stories maybe a little fresher than they would be. I've gotten fairly involved in them. I'm not losing the characters by waiting the extra day between. And it's also giving me time to kind of develop the stories in my head as I go, just a little bit more. Well, our next thing, after my update on my pitiful writing, are some bits of advice, or at least information, on promoting your stuff. And one of the things that Card suggested, what I really liked, and I think I may have to bug the Mudge about doing, because I know he has a book that's actually done, is to get a friend or family member who will not give you regular reports on the progress, but will mail out your query package for you and keep bringing them back and keep sending them out and make sure it's always out there in the hands of somebody. And that way, when something does sell, hey, you're good. Or if you get positive response, sure, but only give an update once every couple of months or once whenever something happens. Now, the other things he had to say were on the alternatives to getting an agent or going with a major publisher. The alternative publishers, the regional presses, says, you know, there are good, legitimate regional presses out there today that are filling the holes that have been left by corporate mergers. And if you're writing in a niche that they publish, you don't have to have New York. If you're looking at subsidy publishers, no, not good. That's the ones where you pay them to print the book, and then you go out and sell it, and they make money, and you really don't that much. And the books on demand, for fiction, this is something I've read elsewhere, that while there is some market for a book on demand in specialty nonfiction, there's not nearly the market there is for fiction. So if you're writing a novel, on-demand publishing doesn't really work that well, at least not yet. Now, the publishing part, once you've got the book out there and you're trying to promote it, the studies show that about 45% of your sales come from the cover of the book, whatever's on the cover. And that's why the publisher gets to choose what goes on the cover, because that's how they recoup their money. And the other, another 45% of it comes from word of mouth. People you've told, people you've told who've told somebody else, or people who've read your book have told somebody else. And then the last 5 to 10% actually come from book signings and advertisements, which is why they don't advertise books all that much, just because they tend to be not an effective way of selling books. And if you're writing science fiction, there's some interesting limits there for what actually works for sellable material. Up to about 17,000 words, you can sell as a newcomer to a magazine. But from 17,000 to about 80,000, it's kind of a no-man's land. There's very few places that are going to publish something that's that short, unless, of course, you're writing young adult, but we're assuming you're writing adult-level fiction. And you're going to have a much better chance of selling if you have 100,000 words or better to be able to actually get your book sold, because publishers, if they're going to commit, they want something that's that much book or that little amount for a magazine. And if you're looking at your advance, really an average advance for your first book is probably going to be about $3,000, and you may get $5,000 if the publisher really believes in you. And the last thing he mentioned was actually something he talked about in his interview as well, that short fiction in science fiction still works okay. In other genres, short fiction, really the market is just getting so tiny and so small that you're likely wasting your time, just because there are only so many publications that can actually put out something on that level. And there's a lot of places online that are doing literary journals and such, and so there is a little bit of a market there. And as you're working, if you don't have anything saleable otherwise, then yes, you can still try and sell to some of those things, or even to like Zoetrope, AllStory, and I can't think of some of the other big literary-esque ones out there, Glimmer Train and such, but there seems to be a little in the way of middle ground. And that is our show for today. Please drop us a line of email at wordtrip@gmail.com with suggestions, comments, show ideas, whatever. And you can also call and leave a voicemail at 678-810-0967, or using Skype, and the ID is WordTrip. Now, we're going to end today with a song by Alex Wilson, who is attending Clarion Writers Workshop right now, which is a long, six-week, intense sci-fi fantasy writing workshop for apparently teachers and unemployed people. I don't know how you can take 6 weeks out of your year to be able to go to this, but anyway, he wrote this little song called Untitled Pretension Pontificated by a Passive Voice, and as a writer, I think you'll probably find it amusing. You can find him at, I believe, alexwilson.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. And remember, it's the story, stupid.
It was a dark and stormy night. I had this clever idea for my first story to write. But my first reader, she was bored to tears. She said it's full of cliches, like, quote, bored to tears. But then I learned I had to write a dreadful amount before my words stop being dreadful. And adverbs don't count. I've got a million words of crap before one publishable one. And here I thought my masterpiece was already done. So I'm working on the stories that I cannot tell. If I do, they'll only rot in a slush pile hell. And so I'll give up sunlight to make my sentences tight, because I'd rather be pale than trite. I time traveled to Vienna 1910, where I met a starving artist and befriended him. I said his signature AH would someday be worth a coup, to which he picked up a rock. He asked if I was a Jew, and then he got so angry he killed everyone alive. And now just a single man and woman barely survive. But now you'll never guess the final twist of my sleeve, 'cause the last man's name was Adam and her name was Eve. But these are the stories that I cannot tell. If I do, they'll only rot in a slush pile hell. And so I'll give up sunlight to make my sentences tight, because I'd rather be pale than trite. The more I read and write, the more my genius degrades, because lots of other writers have given their vampires AIDS. So my story's not the first in which an editor gets killed, or where the hero's really a prince who has this kingdom to rebuild. I looked up a thousand better synonyms for said, but my vocabulary seems to work against me instead. But still, I'll take my first 300 rejects graciously, but I will overcome. I say, no, I quip, no, I pontificate vociferously, but I know these are the stories that I cannot tell. If I do, they'll only rot in a slush pile hell. And so I'll give up some light to make my sentences tight, because I'd rather be pale than trite. Yeah, I'll give up sunlight to make my sentences tight, because I'd rather be vitamin D deficient than trite.